Social glue, innovation, and participation. For any community, the factors of social glue, innovation, and participation seem to go hand in hand. Whether the community consists of a blood-related family under the same roof or a global community connected through Facebook on the internet, the principle that holds the members together is the same. We need to feel needed. In a successful community, each member feels that he or she, one, plays an important role in the processes at hand, and two, has something to contribute that the community needs and wants. When these factors are present, everyone feels excited to participate and more willing to contribute time, support, and ideas. I witnessed these principles firsthand in my mountain community that I described in the last chapter. I can say without reservation that they really work. The ground rules of our 45-member mountain community allowed each person to have a voice in the process of decision-making and chime in with opinions, options, and possibilities when it came to our open discussions. Because we live in a land surrounded by Native American history, we chose to use an indigenous tradition to ensure that each of us had equal opportunity and equal time to speak. Our choice was a Native American talking stick. The idea is simple. As a stick is passed around the room, whoever holds the talking stick has the floor and the right to speak for an agreed-upon period of time while all others listen. Our talking stick was one that came into our community circle quickly and unexpectedly. As a member stood up one evening during a meeting, walked out the door of the firehouse where our meeting was being held, and returned moments later with the first piece of a tree branch that he found on the ground. He just found our new talking stick. That branch remained at our meeting place, and we used it during every meeting for the better part of the summer. And during that summer, each member of our community became a necessary and integral voice in finding the decisions that worked for everyone. Section 2. Visions of Our Future. When I think back to the television programs that were available to my family in the 1960s, I'm amazed by how few there actually were. There were no cable and satellite stations at the time. Networks like CNN, Fox, and BBC didn't exist. My only view into the world beyond my neighborhood was through the eyes of the three major networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS. Apart from the 6 o'clock evening news that fascinated me each day, my favorite programs were those based upon science fiction themes and the future of our world. I scheduled my swimming lessons, music classes, and even my homework around the next installment of Star Trek, Lost in Space, and even futuristic cartoons like The Jetsons. Through these programs, and others like them, we were given a visionary glimpse into what the world could look like only a few decades into our future, and the visions were powerful. In addition to the themes of time travel, space travel, and magnetic cars with no wheels that moved at lightning speeds, there was a common theme that was shown throughout these programs. In the futures that were portrayed, for the most part, the world was at peace and everyone seemed happy. People had all the food they needed from what appeared to be an endless supply of automated gardens. There were robots to do the mundane tasks, so people were free to do the creative, inventive, and visionary kinds of things that brought joy to their lives. 50 years later, the world that George Jetson, his wife Jane, their children Judy and Elroy, and their dog Astro enjoyed has yet to arrive. For the time being, we appear to be stuck in alternating cycles of war and peace, progress and regress, and abundance and poverty in a world polarized between those who have and those who don't. Both the real world statistics and our gut instincts tell us that something's wrong. We know that the polarized world of today simply cannot last. Something's got to give. Something is giving, and it's hard to miss it. The symptoms of our unsustainably divided world are more than just a temporary deviation from the norm. They're the proverbial canary in the coal mine. They're showing us where our attention is required and what needs to happen, as the thinking of the past no longer fits into the world of the present. The turmoil of the Arab Spring riots, for example, in Egypt's Tahrir Square, in the spring of 2012 and again in 2013. The G20 protests in the American city of Pittsburgh in 2009. The groundswell of people risking their lives to cross treacherous oceans and fragile rafts and hike across hostile desert borders in the deadly summer heat in search of a better life are all stops along the journey that began this book. The world itself is telling us that we're on our way to another world. What's important now is to make certain that the world we're going to is better than the one we leave behind. The most obvious question we could ask ourselves at this point in our journey is also the most difficult one to answer. The question is simply this: what does a better world look like? Interestingly, it's common to find that people are at a loss when it comes to answering this single, simple question. What does a better world look like? During a weekend seminar that I led in the fall of 2012, I opened the topic of visions of our future as a point of discussion on the very last day. Throughout the program, the participants had already told me they believe the chaos of our world today is the prelude to a better world of the future. They felt that the realities of peak oil, broken economies, and the disparity of the world's wealth were all tipping points for the big change. With their ideas in mind, I asked the next logical question. I said, assuming that you're all correct, what does a better world look like? To my amazement, as well as that of most of the people in the room, there were nearly as many visions for what our future could look like as there were people in the room sharing them. My staff had set up two microphones on stands near the stage in the front of the room for participants who wanted to step up and share their visions. The lines were long, and we listened to each and every vision. Throughout the sharing, the audience and I learned something about the world that many people hope for. Each vision of the future was being shared through the eyes of the hurt experienced by the person sharing. For example, the teachers in the room envisioned a world with a better system of education, where the teachers are respected for their contribution and all people have similar opportunities to learn. The scientists in the room saw a future where they're allowed to apply the technology that already exists in the laboratory to ease the suffering of the world. The nurses, doctors, and healthcare practitioners envisioned a world where everyone receives the full benefit of today's technology to give them the best chance for a long and healthy life. While there was a general agreement on the need for a sustainable, clean, green, and equitable world, there was a definite lack of consensus regarding what such a world would actually look like and how to get there. As I listened to the heartfelt and passionate visions for our future, I remember thinking that I was witnessing a microcosm in our conference ballroom of what we're all experiencing as a world while we move through our time of transition. I also remember thinking that if a room with 1,000 people who've consciously dedicated a weekend of their lives to such a discussion cannot agree upon a common vision, then how can we expect a planet of 7 billion people with diverse backgrounds, religions, and needs to do so? While we're quick to say we want a better world and we want changes to happen, where do we begin? How do we initiate the kind of changes each day that will shift the way we think and live? Following are two reports from high-level, highly respected organizations that give us a perspective on how we may answer precisely these questions. I've intentionally shared the work from large global organizations to show just how far the thinking along these lines has come. One is through the eyes of the academic world, scholars, think tanks, and futurists. The other is through the people who see the need for the change. When we marry the big picture work with the types of grassroots changes that are being implemented by organizations such as Bioneers, Transition US, and others, we get an idea of how widespread the vision for a big change in our lives has become. I'm sharing these perspectives as a common ground for a place to begin.